Hi, and welcome to Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine's podcast series. I'm Linda Landrigan, editor of the magazine. Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine is a bi-monthly digest of original crime and mystery fiction, and our podcast features authors reading their stories from our back issues. This episode, Meredith Anthony reads her story, So a Man Walks Into a Bookstore, from June 2014. Meredith Anthony is an advertising copywriter in New York City, where she indulges in her passion for theater, opera, and movies. She is also the author of Hellmouth, which she talks about after her reading.
Martin Means, fired that morning for the third time this year, wandered aimlessly through Union Square, carrying the few personal belongings from his desk in a canvas tote bag emblazoned with his former employer's logo. His only conscious goal was not to go home, to face his increasingly disillusioned wife. He could stand it if she cried or screamed or hit him with her fists, but she would simply smile sadly and say, "Oh, Martin." He couldn't face it. It's funny, Martin thought, how being fired repeatedly did nothing to mitigate the pain. You could know it's coming, your boss is a cold bastard, your firm's reversal's only too obvious, all that, and it's still a shock when it happens, a cattle prod to the ego when you're called in for what you realize sickeningly is the final talk. His feelings raw and bruised, his fears for the future looming like a hellish tide, Martin was oblivious to the dense weekday pedestrian traffic that surrounded him, until a gaggle of teenagers, doubtless obeying some arcane mating ritual, suddenly all stopped in front of him. Martin was forced to halt while they teased and traded insults, managing to be both boisterous and sullen at once like a small herd of unruly animals. Martin glanced in the nearest storefront window, his eye attracted by motion inside, and met the eyes of a lovely, slightly disheveled, auburn-haired woman who was gesturing frantically to him, mouthing what seemed to be, "Come in, Martin, and hurry." Martin looked around to see who she was beckoning, finally pointing to his own chest. "Me?" The lovely woman sighed with visible frustration, pursing her lips and pointing, as she made her way to the nearby revolving door. Dazed, Martin moved zombie-like to the door, prepared for her to realize her mistake, say, "Sorry, I thought you were someone else, someone I know, someone I like." But she came out, walked right up to him, and took his arm. "Good to finally meet you, Martin," she said with a smile, her tone a mixture of deference and exasperation. "Thank God you're here. It's time." Completely flummoxed, Martin allowed himself to be tugged forward, pushed gently into the revolving door, his arm clasped again by the lovely woman, who was even more attractive up close. Her wavy auburn hair glowed, and her skin looked soft and warm. She had a lovely floral fragrance that made him want to bury his face in her hair and wrap his arms around her tight. "I'm Jane, the manager here, and I'm such a fan." "I'm sorry," Martin said, playing for time, wanting simultaneously to disabuse her of her misconception and to prolong the warmth of her attention. Jane pulled and guided him across the selling floor of what Martin recognized as one of Manhattan's largest Barnes & Noble stores. "Everyone's waiting," Jane said apologetically as she tugged his arm, urging him to move a bit faster. His attention was fixed on her ample breast pressed against his arm. He looked up just in time to see a large poster on an easel. It bore a photo of a tall, thin, blonde man, middle-aged and boyishly handsome, beneath the large headline, "Meet Martin Christensen." Martin stopped short. The man in the photo, Martin realized, bore a superficial resemblance to himself. General build, approximate age, coloring, although without the stooped posture, the air of anxiety, the permanent defeat he inevitably projected. It was as if he were seeing a successful version of himself, complete with his own first name, blazoned across a poster board. "Martin Christensen," Martin read in the blurb beside the photo, "was the best-selling juggernaut from Denmark, whose trilogy was said to combine Stieg Larsson's political intrigue, Jeffrey Deaver's tight plotting, John Grisham's legal complexity, and Sandra Brown's sexiness. Hailed as the next big thing from Scandinavia, he had been educated in the United States, wrote in flawless English, and was enjoying his first American book tour." Martin turned to Jane, who was smiling broadly as she disengaged her arm from his, and turned him over to two extremely pretty, extremely young girls, both wearing extremely short skirts. Coltish and Leggy, the girls grinned and dimpled and murmured their names, which he didn't catch. The redhead touched his shoulder and pointed to the poster. "You don't look anything like your photograph," she whispered breathlessly. "You are much better looking in person," the blonde giggled, taking his tote bag, while the redhead eased him out of his worn Burberry trench coat. Again, Martin opened his mouth to protest and set them straight, but their adoring looks and eager smiles disarmed him, and he couldn't bear to disappoint them. "It was airbrushed," he said finally, shrugging, and they laughed the kind of tinkling, girlish laughter that quickens the middle-aged heart. The girls crowded close. The blonde straightened his collar and tie and smoothed his sports jacket lapels. The redhead stood on tiptoes to pat his hair into place, letting her fingers brush his cheek, her dewy lips parting slightly, her cornflower eyes locked on his. "We're from your American publisher," the blonde told him. "We'll be with you for your whole U.S. tour, every step of the way." "So whatever you need," added the redhead meaningfully, "just ask." "Anything," mouthed the blonde, making it several syllables. Martin gaped at them, almost believing for a moment that the attention, the promise, the adoration of these gorgeous creatures was for him. His shoulders slumped as he reminded himself that once again he wasn't what was wanted. Three loud popping noises drew his attention as Jane tapped the microphone. "Good morning and welcome to Barnes & Noble's Meet the Authors series. This morning we welcome Martin Christensen, author of a trilogy acclaimed in his native Denmark, the first volume of which has just been released here to ecstatic reviews. Please welcome Martin Christensen." The applause was immediate and enthusiastic. The blonde gave him a warm smile and a gentle shove up the three stairs to the microphone platform. Jane was beaming at him, clapping her hands. He might as well use the mic to tell them all that he was definitely not Martin Christensen, wasn't anybody, in fact. He glanced out the plate glass window, expecting to see the real Martin Christensen crossing the street, rushing to the bookstore, Nordic, handsome, and attractively flushed, with a charming story about why he was so late. There was no one out there but the usual bleak weekday throng. No famous authors, no one coming to claim the adulation. The crowd was standing now, still applauding. Martin stepped to the microphone, delaying telling them the truth, allowing himself to bask just for a moment in the warmth of being wanted. He closed his eyes for just a second, feeling the anticipation, the eagerness of the crowd as the applause died down and the crowd resumed their seats. Martin took a deep breath, squared his shoulders, and opened his mouth to speak when, at his side, the lovely Jane gently thrust an open book into his hands. Startled, he looked down at the book, open to the heading Chapter 1. He kept his finger in the open page, but closed the volume so he could see the cover. It was Martin Christensen's famous novel. He turned it so he could see the back cover, and on it was a photo of Martin Christensen, the great man with a superficial resemblance to Martin himself. The crowd, taking this for a joke, perhaps about the nature of fame, laughed delightedly, applauding again. Martin looked out at the eager faces, the intelligent, sparkling eyes, the lips parted in anticipation. His inner voice told him this wasn't for him. This welcome, this love, this would end again badly in humiliation and tears. Martin opened the book again, cleared his throat, and began to read. Martin had always loved to read. He possessed a surprisingly sonorous voice, given his meek nature. When they were first married, he had sometimes read aloud to his wife, particularly mysteries and adventures. Now, he told himself, he was in the middle of one. He suppressed his doubts and fears and lost himself in the text. When he looked up at the end of the chapter and gently closed the book, he was proud and gratified to see women dabbing their eyes, even men blinking and wiping away unbidden tears. The applause was rapturous, and again, people stood, clapping, nodding their approval. A twinge of panic made Martin glance around the large selling floor, beyond the roped-off area with the dais and chairs, beyond the space where the overflow crowd had gathered, their shopping bags forgotten beside them, Everyone in the store gave Martin their lusty approval. But no one was pushing angrily through the crowd. No security guards were charging toward him. No store employee waving his author photo and frowning. Martin briefly marveled that a good half hour had elapsed, and still no Martin Christensen had appeared, or evidently called with an excuse. Martin brought his attention back to the audience right before him, sitting again, quieting down. Jane joined him on the dais. When a woman in the second row raised her hand, Jane nodded and pointed authoritatively at her. "Mr. Christensen, how do you make us care so much about a corrupt lawyer defending an evil politician?" she asked, her voice cracking slightly with emotion. The hushed crowd gazed at Martin as he stood, absolutely still, at the microphone. He let the pause lengthen. Then he leaned forward slightly. "Well, I think we all have an essential humanity that we recognize in one another, despite the flaws in our behavior, the bad choices, the mistakes. Our empathy trumps our disapproval, and the empathy is earned. We are all quite simply doing our best." A man in the back shot to his feet as the applause died down, not waiting to be called upon. "There are rumors that you cannot return to Denmark, that powerful factions have targeted you for death." The crowd gasped. Martin goggled at him. He had no idea what he was talking about. "I have no intention of going back to Denmark right now," he said, wincing as his magnified voice boomed out a little louder than he intended. "I'm having too much fun in this country." As the laughter died down, he added, "Politics are always with us, and it's always complicated. There are politics everywhere, aren't there? Even here." Martin was beginning to relax into the role. It was like the familiar trope where the hapless puppet master finds his creation spontaneously producing profanity, insults, and danger. Only here, Martin found erudition, talent, and charm. As he looked across his rapt audience at the many raised hands, Martin was distracted by a commotion outside the window. Directly across the street, a man was running, pushing through a dense crowd of pedestrians, shoving passers-by. The frantic man, his eyes wild, dashed into the street. Martin Christensen, flushed and sweating, his Burberry trench coat flapping, darted out into traffic. The man, to Martin's horror, was struck by a bus, with a jolt that Martin couldn't hear but felt viscerally. Martin leapt off the dais instantly and ran for the bookstore door. He was executing his plan before he really even realized he had one. He hurtled into the street, hearing screams and horns and sirens. He pushed through the onlookers and dropped to his knees by the side of the fallen author, whose face was bloody and disfigured. "Stay back! Give him air!" he yelled, and the crowd shrank back as Martin loosened the man's collar and tie. "Call an ambulance!" 30 people obediently produced cell phones. Bending over the man, visibly crushed and way beyond any help, Martin pretended to give CPR. He managed to slip his own wallet into the author's pocket, replacing the victim's wallet, which he tucked into his own jacket. He sat back on his heels. "I'm sorry," he said to no one at all. "He's gone." As the siren inched closer through the dense stop traffic, Martin rose and brushed off his pants and slipped through the crowd. He turned and walked into Barnes & Noble, head high, and returned to the podium. The crowd, most of whom were pressed against the window, greeted him rapturously. Not only a brilliant author and a political force, but a real-life hero. He waved the applause away modestly, wiping blood from his cheek, and asked for more questions. 20 minutes later, the lovely Jane announced that that was all the time they had. She guided Martin down the steps again and over to a nearby table, where he sat in front of a pile of Sharpies as the two girls from the publisher organized a kind of assembly line. The audience was already lining up. The blonde asked for the name, wrote it on a sticky note. The redhead took a book off the pile and opened it to the title page, placing the sticky note on it. Jane took the book from the redhead and handed it open to Martin, who wrote the person's name, a brief greeting, and signed, "Best, Martin." It was tedious, repetitive work, and Martin had never been happier. When he finally looked up again, he found that no one was waiting. He'd gone through 3 Sharpies, innumerable sticky notes, and most of the enormous pile of books. Jane pushed the remaining copies toward him. "Please sign this doc, Martin. Do you mind?" "Not at all, my dear Jane," Martin smiled graciously. He didn't mind a bit. As the publisher's girl smiled and flirted and fawned, he got up and stretched his cramped fingers. Jane was peeling off signed by the author stickers and pressing them on the covers of the remaining books. Martin looked out the window where traffic had started to flow normally again, the body gone. Only a few police officers milled around the bus now parked along the far sidewalk. At his side, Jane asked, "Do you have plans?" Martin looked at her uncertainly. He'd never seen a lovelier woman. Her middle-aged, curvaceous glory outshone even the dazzling young publisher's girls. The blonde from the publisher looked up, frowning. "We thought we'd take Mr. Christensen back to his hotel to rest. He's got a suite at the Soho W." The red made a little moue of her own. "He has a cocktail reception and dinner tonight. He needs to unwind." Undaunted, Jane smiled up at him. "I'd like to buy you lunch," she said simply. "No contest." "I'd like that." Martin drank in her floral scent and his pulse picked up tempo. "Maybe the girls can give you the scheduling information and we can have a bite at the restaurant at the W." She turned to the two girls. "You'll have him for the rest of the book tour," she said kindly. "Surely you can spare him this afternoon." Martin watched as they acquiesced with grudging good grace. The blonde gave him a hotel key card and wrote the suite number on a sticky note. "We'll see you tonight, then." Martin nodded and turned to gaze at the luscious Jane. This was quite a day. He'd been fired at 10, lionized at 11, hailed as a hero at noon, and now at 2 he was being wooed. Ahead of him was a leisurely expensive meal, a drink or two, and the rest of the afternoon, most likely spent in the arms of this lovely woman. The redhead held his Burberry for him and as he shrugged into it. He gave her a wink and she pursed her lips in a kiss as Jane tucked her arm firmly into his. The blonde, still pouting prettily, handed him his canvas tote bag. As they left the store, Jane paused briefly to speak to an employee. He easily slid the tote bag into a nearby trash receptacle. Again, he felt the weight and warmth of Jane's breast on his arm as they walked down the block to the W. He could get used to this. Pleasantly, Jane didn't feel the need to chatter, and they walked in companionable silence. Martin allowed himself to wonder about the future. Could he pull this off? Not just today, but going forward? The incredible good luck of Martin Christensen's untimely death. His own fast action in substituting his wallet for the dead man's. The fact that no one at the publishing house had actually met him before. The next two novels in the trilogy were already written and would come out over the next couple years, earning him millions and keeping him busy. He could imagine at least a few years into a blissful future filled with women like this soft, fragrant, lovely one. Years filled with readings and signings and parties and adoring fans, maybe even threesomes with the publisher's girls, just for the fun of it. A tuxedo-clad host interrupted his reverie, and he was ushered into a buttery leather banquet at the W's intimate restaurant. To his delight, Jane sat beside him instead of across from him, her hand brushing his thigh as she straightened her skirt. Martin's groin responded with a throb of anticipation, and then another imperative. "Jane, my dear, please excuse me, just for a moment." Jane smiled, kissed him briefly on the cheek. "I'll order for you, shall I?" Martin nodded happily. Jane turned her attention to the sommelier, asking about their best Malbec. Their waiter discreetly indicated the men's room at the back of the gracious, dimly lit restaurant, filled with flowers and candles and the murmur of conversations from other late diners. Martin paused at the mirror before heading to his stall. He still had some good years left. His boyish good looks hadn't completely deserted him. He wondered if the hotel had a masseuse after his afternoon's exertions, or maybe a facial. He deserved it. He was Martin Christensen. The men's room door opened and a nondescript man came in, quickly checking the stalls and, strangely, locking the door. They were alone. "Hello, Martin," he said. He reached in his jacket pocket and pulled on one soft leather glove, then another. Puzzled, Martin stared at him. Had he been at the reading? Had he been on the street after the accident? Worse, was the man someone he knew from work, from his old life? The man stared back at Martin as he opened his jacket and removed a large gun. Denmark misses you. He reached in his pocket and produced a tube, which he screwed into the gun's barrel. Martin's heartbeat accelerated and his legs felt weak. He grabbed the sink behind him to steady himself. No, wait. I'm not him. I'm not who you think I am. Martin's usually sonorous voice broke into a squeak. He was babbling. He had to make this man understand his mistake. I'm not him. Sure you are, Martin, and I must say I've never seen a better switch than the one you pulled on the street. Well done, my man. He had finished with the silencer and now clicked something on the side of the gun. Probably, Martin thought, the safety. You don't have to do this, Martin blurted. He's already dead. If you were sent to kill Martin Christensen, he's already dead. The man seemed amused. I know. Who do you think he was running from, pal? He asked. Why do you think he was so late? He brought the gun up and sighted down the barrel, hardly necessary since Martin was less than 4 feet from him. Martin's vision blurred. His heart pounded. But he's dead. That's what matters. That's what you want, isn't it? The gun barrel came up vertical. You can't imagine my disappointment to see that guy get hit by that bus. You know, here he was, a big ticket hit, and he goes and gets whacked by a bus. The man shook his head. Martin couldn't think clearly. But I thought you wanted him dead. The man shrugged. Hey, pal, I don't care one way or the other. The man chuckled at Martin's baffled face. But you can't imagine my amazement when you made that switch. Now, that was a gift. I'll have to hand it to you. That was sweet. And Martin Christensen, he gets a whole new lease on life. Martin's head swam. But he doesn't. He's already dead. The man was patient with him. But that wasn't him, was it? It was some poor schmuck whose face was pulped and was identified by the ID in his wallet, which is great, because they don't pay me for some guy gets hit by a bus. He leveled the gun again. No, pal. They pay me for Martin Christensen. They pay me for this.
That was Meredith Anthony reading her story, So a Man Walks Into a Bookstore, from the June 2014 issue of Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine. While we had her in to read for the podcast, we asked Meredith about her new book, Hellmouth.
Well, I just published a thriller, a domestic thriller called Hellmouth, which actually started as a short story in your sister publication, Ellery Queen. It's a novel set in a small town where a woman comes to believe that her beloved husband may have killed someone. And, of course, mayhem ensues. Hellmouth was actually, and by the way, that's not my husband's nickname for me. It was based on my parents, who were figures in a small town where a big crime happened some years ago. So it was sort of fun to revisit that town and I wanted to write a thriller in a very small, it's almost like a locked room thriller. It's about a very small, closed off area of Pennsylvania. I think small towns have a kind of a strange beauty all their own. And, it provides a very interesting, backdrop, I think, for murders.
Well, thank you, Meredith Anthony, for your reading and discussion of your writing. I'm Linda Landrigan, editor of Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine. We're published 6 times a year by Dell Magazines and Penny Publications. To learn more about us, you can go to our website, alfredhitchcocksmysterymagazine.com, or look for us on Facebook or on our blog, traceevidence.net. You can find the magazine at your newsstand, and digital editions are available at all major e-tailers. This podcast was produced with the help of Jackie Sherbo and Deanna McLafferty. Thanks for listening.